It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
One, the United States of America has not hardened. It has not coarsened. In fact, if we're trying to diagnose our problems in the United States of America, we've softened. We need more men like Daniel Penny. Two, it doesn't matter what is revealed in your investigation. I know what I know. I saw the picture. We now live in an age post-truth. I give you April Ryan. Three, Matt Araiza, punt god, wasn't even in the house where he was accused of rape. Now, where does he go to get back his reputation? It's the Will Kane podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome to the weekend. Welcome to Friday. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment, at Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. Man, I've had my eyes opened. I mean, I've traveled. I'm not going to say I'm necessarily worldly, but I've traveled. I've been to Greece. I've been throughout Europe. I've been to Mexico. But I don't know that I have traveled the way that I traveled this week. And that is truly experiencing, well, an undeveloped country, the third world. El Salvador. On Monday, my brothers and I took what has now become an annual tradition of just 2 days to go somewhere together and surf. I think it's an awesome thing for the three of us to get together and spend some time as adults. We like surfing to varying degrees of devotion and certainly to varying degrees of ability. I would never say I'm good. I would never describe myself as a surfer, but I would say that I enjoy surfing the way that some other men enjoy golf. I like it, even if I'm not any good at surfing. I'll sit on the water. I'll float. No problem. I have a good time being on the water. I have a good time looking back at the land. I have a good time being quiet. If I catch some waves and get a little bit of an adrenaline flow or just get flow, all the better. It's the one shot in golf. But I don't really care. I have fun surfing. So last year, my brothers and I went to Sayulita, Mexico, and really enjoyed some time in the small town on the waters around Sayulita. This year, we kept the exploration, the adventure, by going this time to El Salvador. We went to a little town after flying into San Salvador called El Tunco. And El Salvador is attempting to brand itself on the tourist map as Surf City. And let me tell you something. They got a ways to go. I don't know how many people there were tourists, but if they were a tourist, they were there for surfing. I don't know yet who is making the trip to El Salvador. But once you get there, you really experience what it means for a country to be underdeveloped. Man, first of all, it is hot. It's hot, hot. And I'm from Texas and it's hot. It's the kind of hot that it's on you like a fur coat. You can't get away from it. It's humid. It's constant. There is no breeze. I'm telling you, it sits on you. And everywhere you go, there's really not much you can do to relieve yourself of the heat. We had a little pool in our resort, but all the pool did was ensure that you were going to feel wet for a little bit longer in the day. In fact, you never felt dry. Between being in the water and sweating, you always had a sticky dampness to yourself, no matter the time of day. It was not the kind of place I felt confident getting myself a really cold iced cocktail. So beers were the best you could do to bring some relief. And I got to be real. When I walked the streets of El Tunco, I felt way less safe than I did when I walked the streets of Sayulita. I mean, this was a tiny little village. I don't know what kind of population was tourist. As I said, all the tourists were probably surfers. And there was kind of an edge in every dark alley. And I'm telling you, man, I think most of the houses in town didn't, if they had running water, I don't know that they had, you know, centralized sewage. They certainly didn't have electricity, or I don't know, maybe they had some electricity. This was sustenance. This was survivability living. It really is eye-opening in a way that should make you grateful for living in the United States of America and understanding why people would take the beast, the train, the trek, the long march all the way to our southern border. But it will really highlight some things for you about our place in the world, America. For all our self-hatred and all of our self-perfection, let me tell you something. We've got this dialed in about as good as human beings can have it dialed in. You know, we talk a lot about our contribution to climate change, or our contribution to environmentalism, and our sins, whether or not they be racism or pollution. And let me just tell you something. We're relative angels in the world. I mean, here's a thing. When I surfed, for example, when my brothers and I hit the water, the first day we went to a little town called La Libertad. And in order to get down to the gravelstone beach, you had to make your way through essentially what looked like a garbage dump, just short of a garbage dump. I'm talking bottle caps and plastic, everything short of a syringe. And then that stuff was in the first, I'd say, 6 feet of water as well, washing up. You waded through it. Man, I swear to you, you waded through it before you could toss your board onto the water to paddle out to the lineup. And let me tell you something, the water is incredibly warm. It's not like California, that's cold ocean. Mexico, Hawaii, that's refreshing temperature of ocean water. This was bath water, same as the air everywhere you went. You just kind of felt wet, not relief from the heat. Now, I know it sounds like I'm complaining, but all I'm really actually doing is giving you a vivid, accurate description because I enjoyed it. I told my brothers, hey, guys, this is a FOB. This is a forward operating base on surf adventure. We're out there. The only place left to go after this one is where they certainly do not have electricity or running water. But I enjoyed it. I like the adventure of forward operating base surfing. I like the little bit of danger of will we come home. I do. I enjoy it. I don't know that I enjoy the roulette wheel spin of every meal, wondering if it's going to send me into a week of destruction in the bathroom. I don't love that. And for the record, El Salvador, not necessarily known for its cuisine either. I mean, I like a pupusa as much as the next guy. But, pupusas for breakfast, pupusas for snack, pupusas for lunch, pupusas for dinner, at various times garnished with an egg or an avocado. I mean, there's only so much you can do. But again, I promise you, I'm not complaining. What I'm actually going to do is tie this into a conversation that's begun to be had. For example, there was a conversation on the Fox News channel between Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Sean Hannity about environmentalism. Sean, in his conversation with RFK, made the two concepts one in the same, environmentalism and control of carbon emissions. And RFK said, well, that's not really who I am. I'm sort of more of an old school environmentalist, anti-pollution, clean water, clean air. Now, I'm not sure RFK is being honest, and I hope to actually have an honest conversation with RFK Jr. perhaps next week when I will sit in at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Fox for the week. Because I think I've seen him in the past say that he thinks climate denialists should be thrown in jail. Literally thrown in jail. But I could be wrong, but I think he certainly needs to clarify. But if he is truly an old school environmentalist, clean water, clean air, anti-pollution, well, I think that's a movement we can all get behind. Look, travel to El Salvador. Travel to China. Wade through the bottle caps and the plastics. Literally, you will wade through them. They'll bump your shin. They will be underfoot. You'll hope there's not a syringe. And then go to California. Go to Texas. Go to Florida. And say, are we really making a dent? Are we making a dent with paper straws? No, we're not making a dent. We're not even sinning with plastic straws. We are the angels on the world stage. And I will admit, some of that, notably, is through government regulation. But we cannot regulate or self-flagellate ourselves into fixing the world. Were we to admit, and we will not admit, that carbon control is the key to our utopic future, it doesn't matter what we do here to drive EVs, it doesn't change the behavior of India or China, who are the bottle cap and plastic emitters of the world stage when it comes to carbon. It's their oceans. And by the way, it's not just figurative and metaphorical. It's literally their oceans that are the garbage dump. If you want to do those studies, and people have, on the trash, ocean trash, it's not coming from the United States of America. Neither is the world's carbon. We can perfect at home. We cannot control abroad. And all you need to do is do a tiny bit of traveling to realize not only how good do we have it, but how well we guard, how good we stewardship this earth. It makes you appreciate the United States of America. And for what it's worth, I had fun. I enjoyed El Salvador. The people were incredibly nice. Out in the lineup, surfing, which is always an accomplishment because you don't want to be made to feel an outsider and unwelcome or a kook, which we are. Well, most of us, me and my brothers, not all of them. One brother would take huge exception. One brother got called a super kook. And I would say I'm a kook. Okay, so it's nice to be welcomed and not be treated, you know, with derision or anger in the surf lineup. Same thing in the restaurants. We have fun. We ultimately settled on White Russians was the safest drink. I finally figured that out like a day or two in the trip. No, I will take vodka, Kahlua, and leche, please. In my broken Spanish, I understood it when she said, in what parts? I was so proud of myself. 1-1-2, vodka, Kahlua, two parts leche, please. I'm horrible at Spanish, but I will run it out there like nobody's business. I will, like driving by Braille, bang into every rail, use the wrong words, use the wrong conjugation, whatever. I mean, I'm here to practice car. I'm not here to speak English and be embarrassed. Nah, man, let's do this. We ended up in this bar. It was awesome. On this river that probably doubles as sewage runoff into the ocean, NBD. So it was a beautiful sight right there on the river / ocean, this bar, open air, of course, watching Champions League football on Tuesday, Manchester City versus Real Madrid. Everyone speaking Spanish, rooting for Real Madrid. Me rooting for Manchester City, drinking El Salvadorian beer, trying not to order piña coladas and margaritas, worried about the hielo, giving me Montezuma's revenge. But hey, everything seems to come out hunky-dory. Got in and out safe, relatively safe. No bumps, only a few bruises. And actually did a decent job surfing. I posted it on my Instagram. You can see me catching a few waves. Super kook in the lineup, having fun and appreciating El Salvador. Having fun in El Salvador, but letting it give me some context on what it means to be an environmentalist versus try to control carbon and what it means to be an American. How special yet again it is here in the United States of America.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Story number one. The United States of America has not coarsened. It has not hardened. In fact, if you want to diagnose the problems of the United States of America, it is that we have softened. We need more heroicism. We need more toughness. We need more men like Daniel Penny. Late last week, a story out of New York where a homeless man named Jordan Neely terrorized a subway train car was subdued by former Marine Daniel Penny. Penny put Neely into a chokehold and kept him on the ground of the subway car while several other men sort of helped slightly subdue Neely. Sadly and unfortunately, at the end of this incident, Neely lost his life. Everyone has looked at this story and seen the obvious tragedy. Others have read into this story the modern American race drama. You see, Daniel Penny is white. Jordan Neely is black. What they see there is vigilantism, white supremacy. What they see there is the coarsening of American culture in ignoring the needs of the homeless. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says that everybody on that train responded not by wondering how this man had lost his home, how this man had lost his mind, but through the selfish lens of safety. Others, like Sunny Hostin of The View, have said, I would have given him money, because it's always about Sunny Hostin and her empathy. It's always about how she is the hero of her own personal little movie playing out inside of her head and for the rest of us, unfortunately, on ABC. But the truth of the story is that anyone who has lived in New York City understands what it feels like to ride on that subway with or without children, male or female, and think at any moment this subway car could explode into violence. Jordan Neely had been arrested something like 44 times over the past decade. He had threatened women. He had terrorized the subway. He had a substance abuse problem. Reports are he was using synthetic marijuana. We have all who have lived in New York City, and perhaps those of you who have visited, experienced these moments, not just on the subway, but also on New York City streets. A man, always, almost, ranting and raving incoherently, yelling at strangers, begging someone to make eye contact. And that eye contact is not for human touch, but the excuse for human violence. This isn't projection. I'm not guessing. I lived this for 15 years in New York City. I could tell you the blocks, Broadway and 79th Street, where there were men that constantly ranted and raved and had everybody within a two-block square walking around on edge, preparing themselves for what seemed like spontaneous but predictable violence. Same thing on the subway. Interestingly, my memory is not very good, so I don't store these moments, but I do remember a moment where somebody started yelling at one of my children. And then when he stepped in between cars, I shut that subway door and wouldn't let him come back in when he tried to enter our subway car. You know what else is interesting about these moments? A moment where I did that. Not that I'm the hero of that story. Nobody wants to be in that moment, because all you want is to escape to freedom with those that you love. Is that everybody in the car is actually on the same page, but only few are willing to do or take action. There's no gray area. There's no misunderstanding. There's nobody on the car going, hey, guys, take it easy. Anybody have a five spot? Let's get him a sandwich. No, because we all know in those moments, that's not what's happening. This isn't the moment for self-reflection about the system and how it spit out people into homelessness, which, by the way, is a deeper conversation and one that perhaps we can have here on the Will Cain podcast about the correlation, and as we dive deeper, perhaps the causational effect of shutting down mental health hospitals, insane asylums, and the corresponding rise in homelessness, drug addiction, and violence on our streets. The chart's pretty stark. You can look at the two line graphs. That's not an easy diagnosis or potential suggestion or solution, because we know there were problems with involuntary commitment, abuse inside mental health hospitals. We know that was no turnkey solution to America's problems. But neither, obviously, is turning out the sick onto our streets to dig through trash cans, calm their brains with drugs, and terrorize the rest of the citizenry with their illness. And that's what happens. Look, that's not to malign every person who suffers from mental illness. We can all follow along the logical bouncing ball. But we can also see that most of this stuff is one of two categories, and often both, career criminals and the mentally ill. Jordan Neely satisfied both of those criteria. And as he was terrorizing that subway car once again, America's answer to him couldn't be softness. It wasn't, as AOC pleads for, more empathy. It wasn't some spare change from the pockets of Sunny Hostin. No, what it needed, what America needed, what the people of that train car needed, was a man of action. That's what we all need. When we look around and we see the growing insanity in our world, this who knows what motivation would bring someone to commit the kind of terror we saw in Allen, Texas. I mean, I've seen the photos, I've seen the video, it's nightmare material about him and the destruction he did to families, to children. Who knows what drives someone to that place and in that moment, but I do know that it was cut short by a heroic security guard. I'm surprised it wasn't cut short sooner by a heroic citizen in Texas, constitutionally armed. Or even, and not to put all of the burden on one man or one moment, I don't know who the man is or the woman might be. If you see the video of the moment where the Allen shooter gets out of his car, there was a black pickup truck pulling out of its parking spot. Could it have run him over in that moment? I don't know. But I do know that the answer is not more softening. It's not less masculinity. It's not toxic. We need heroes. We need tough men willing to step up for tough situations. I firmly believe this. We need men like Daniel Penny. Now, this interaction between Daniel Penny and Jordan Neely is not perhaps without fault. Clearly, Neely died. Did Penny hold that chokehold for too long? I don't know. That's for a jury of his peers to understand the facts. What kind of training did he have? How long did he hold it? Did he give relief moments to Neely to allow blood flow and air flow? I don't know. I don't know those facts. I'm not here to tell you that Daniel Penny did everything right, nor to tell you there wasn't a tragedy. Perhaps even when it's all said and done and we know the facts, perhaps even an injustice. But I do know this. There is injustice every time you allow one person to terrorize 30, be that with a firearm or be that with their volatile, violent presence. And the only way we're going to answer any of it isn't to always hope to outsource our own security. It's not going to be to always hope the police arrive in time. Oh, those are levels of expectations we can maintain that we should have. But you know what else? We have to be able to stand up for ourselves. And to hell with any prosecutor that steps in and says, you don't have that right. To hell with Alvin Bragg in New York going after a bodega clerk owner for defending himself from a violent attack. The right to self-defense is a fundamental right. I am not required to be anyone's victim. And in a civil society, it should be expected that I be someone else's hero. That's how it should work in a society that values the characteristics of manhood, that is not toxic, that is actually heroic. Again, I don't sit here today and argue that every action taken by Daniel Penny was just or correct. We'll let the facts and a court of law help us arrive at those conclusions. But I do know the instinct is absolutely correct. And I'll guarantee you that every person on that subway car appreciated what Daniel Penny did that day. He wasn't looking to hurt. In my estimation, he wasn't looking to hurt. Certainly not looking to kill. How dare AOC call it murder? But rather to subdue what was a volatile and violent threat. And because of that instinct, we need more Daniel Pennies.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
Story number two. They don't care about your facts. They don't care about the investigation. They know what they know. They saw the picture. We live in post-truth America. Fascinating exchange this past week in a press conference with DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, who's single-handedly in charge of the destruction of the American southern border. Mayorkas was taking a question from former PBS, now griot, quote-unquote, reporter April Ryan. April Ryan said to Mayorkas something about the different types of illegal immigrants that are arriving at the American southern border. She said they're not all Mexican. They are Haitian. They are African. And she pointed to, in her experience, the moment a year ago when Border Patrol, this was her words, whipped Haitian migrants. She kept going on as she had stated a fact. Well, Mayorkas stopped her and said, we've had investigation. That did not happen. They were not whipped. But Ryan wasn't hoping to slip one through. She stood by it. Well, I saw the pictures. I don't know what your investigation revealed, but I saw the pictures and they were getting whipped by something, said Ryan. Now, I want to remind you, this is a quote unquote reporter that worked for state funded media in PBS, now with the griot, who has no interest. She couldn't say it in clearer terms and more stark words. No interest in your facts, no interest in your investigation, no interest in the truth. This is an agent of disinformation. And of course, like every racist who presents themselves now to the American public as an anti-racist, she is a disinformation agent presenting herself as a fighter against disinformation. She wants to give you the lie. Damn the torpedoes. Damn the truth. It is so fascinating. Michael Schellenberger, friend of the program here on the Will Cain podcast, part of the Twitter Files investigators, has talked about this, that the media and the elites, politicians, largely on the left, would have you believe that the United States of America is descending into a racial dystopia. And they may well create their own reality. But it's fair to say the following set of logical statements. The United States of America is the least racist nation on the face of the planet. Find me another one. More diverse, more inclusive, more tolerant. The United States of America is in its least racist moment in history by almost any measure and any token. We are, maybe you could say in the 1990s, early 2000s, we had arrived at a more post-racial world. I'll give you that. Maybe we've rolled it back just over the last 15 years. But over a wider time frame, hundreds, half century, centuries, we're in the least racist moment in American history, which means we are in the least racist moment on the globe. And then by the mathematical equation, we are living, all of us here in the United States of America, in the least racist moment in the history of humanity. And yet, every effort has been made to try to define us and tear us apart on the basis of race. What would be the purpose of that denial of reality? Why would people attempt to define this as a racist hellhole, backsliding into fascism, despite evidence, despite, hey, walk around the world, you know? What world do you live in? I'll tell you what world I live in. Black and white interact with each other on a pretty regular basis, to pretty, if not complete, nice harmony. Rooting for each other as human beings, helping support each other's children, rooting for their children on the soccer field, hoping their education is maximized to the best of their ability, doing business with one another, often through self-interest, and setting aside irrational differences like skin color. Most people's life on a daily basis is pretty post-racial. And the larger polling and stats bear that out. And yet here we are on a constant basis, divided, proselytized to, as Hank Johnson, representative from Georgia, he's the guy that once said he's worried Guam is going to tip over. You remember that? With a freaking like high-level military dude sitting there talking about the number of troops we're going to station on the island Guam. He literally and seriously said he was worried about it capsizing Guam that would tip over. I'm trying to say it was a joke later. It was not. You go look it up. I encourage you. Look it up on YouTube. It's stunning. Well, his latest, greatest hit was this past week where he said Republicans like illegal immigration because they want to bring back slavery. And they would bring back slavery, but they'll settle for cheap labor. This is the world he thinks he lives in, the world where he describes you, those who disagree with him, as hoping to bring back slavery. And he's not alone. Joe Biden, as a vice presidential candidate under Barack Obama, once said, they're going to put you all back in chains, speaking to a black audience. Literally. Like, we want slavery back. We're going to put people back in chains, despite all evidence of your life, my life, our world experience in data, despite facts. April Ryan can't be bothered with facts. Post-truth, baby. Divide people. Why? It's easy. Divide and conquer. Your victimization is their power. If you're a victim, you're their hero. If you're the victim, they're your hero. Self-justification. Give them views, give them clicks, give them money, give them power. They're your savior. Like the savior before that and the savior before that. And with each generation, they only continue to peddle the falsehood, the untruth, that the world is going to hell in a handbasket and that everyone is a neo-Confederate. I don't need your facts. I don't need your investigation. I saw the pictures. Those migrants were whipped by Border Patrol agents. Says your post-truth messenger, April Ryan. Story number three. Where does Matt Araiza go to get his reputation back? Matt Araiza was a punter for San Diego State University a few years ago. He was known as the punt god because he was awesome. He averaged 50 yards a punt. He was so good, and this doesn't happen very often, he was drafted sixth round by the Buffalo Bills. But he never made it much after that draft. He never made it to camp, but obviously never made it to the team because he was accused and sued in a civil suit for gang rape of a then 17-year-old at a Halloween party during Araiza's senior year at San Diego State. He was immediately dropped by the Buffalo Bills during the preseason after the allegations emerged. This week, law enforcement has said Matt Araiza wasn't at the house where the alleged gang rape took place. Couldn't have done it, wasn't there. So where does he go to get his reputation back? It is an absolutely, this is the type of story that makes my blood boil because it reveals how few people out there care about actual justice. They're happy to engage in destructive injustice if all the right characters fit all the right roles in just the right play. Let me give you some examples. Mary Catherine Hamm at OutKick has laid it out well. She wrote, there's the court of law, and then there's the court of public opinion. Cynthia Freeland of the NFL Network called it scary that in reporting on the Bills preseason, she had been standing 4 feet from him for the entire broadcast. It is yucky and awful. Jemele Hill of the Atlantic, formerly of ESPN, of course, assumed Ariza's guilt and criticized San Diego State and law enforcement. She tweeted, the police did nothing, even though the teenager reported this rape within hours of it happening. The university did nothing until 7 months or so later. And now the Bills claim they knew nothing. Whole lot of doing nothing. This is why women so often resort to civil cases. On and on. CBS. Name your outlet. Not just presumed, but stated with confidence the guilt of Matt Ariza. Now, here's what prosecutors are now saying, quoting from Mary Catherine Hamm. Now we know why no charges were filed. Prosecutors' investigation included 35 witness interviews, 4 terabytes of cell phone data from partygoers with search warrants. Ariza appears in none of the videos, according to prosecutors. And witnesses say he left the party an hour before the taped encounters and the time of the alleged rapes. I looked at the videos, the prosecutor says. I absolutely cannot prove any forcible sexual assault based upon what happened. Her lawyer, the accuser's lawyer, says the videos do not prove Matt Ariza was never present, just that the cameras did not capture his image. But Matt Ariza, as Mary Catherine Hamm points out, cannot prove a negative. It is the prosecutor, or in that case, the civil case's plaintiff's job, to prove he was present and that he committed sexual assault. He can't go around proving a negative. It's impossible. Everybody saw this as, you know, another white male athlete getting away with something like the Duke lacrosse players who were wrongfully accused of rape in 2006 by an accuser. And in that case, a district attorney. Mary Catherine Hamm brings up a fascinating case. She says, let's talk about Brian Banks. Brian Banks was 16 in 2002. He was a blue chip recruit to USC, he's from California, when he was falsely accused of rape by classmate Juanetta Gibson. Despite proclaiming his innocence, Banks took a plea deal on advice from his lawyers and served 5 years in prison and 5 years probation while his accuser was given $750,000 in a suit against the school system. The accuser later contacted Banks on Facebook. He agreed to meet her up, but recorded the conversation where she admitted she made the whole thing up. But that was after he had given 10 years of his life. He got a shot in 2012 with the Seahawks and then had a little stay with the Atlanta Falcons. He's now a motivational speaker, speaks on his ordeal. Look, obviously there are women that have horrible things done to them. And I'm sure the number of that outpaces the number of men who are falsely accused. But one injustice does not excuse another injustice. And on these injustices, not only do we show no interest, but we're parties, meaning the media. We're creators of the injustice. Those people, Freeland and Hill and others, they're responsible as much as anybody else for the reputational damage to Matt Ariza. His financial interest, his social life, his personal relationships, they had no problem. They have no problem. They'll do it again. Destroying another human being. And for what? For their story. I don't mean their news story. I mean the story playing in their head, the story they spill onto social media, that there's certain bad guys and certain good guys. And if all the characters align, the play is written perfectly. They cast themselves as the hero while destroying others' lives. And when you're a Matt Ariza or a Brian Banks or a Duke lacrosse player, where do you go to ever get your reputation back? Hey, in the course of recording this podcast today, I want to give you this information that came into me, texted me right now. This is from NBC New York. Former Marine Daniel Penny expected to be charged in Jordan Neely chokehold death. Let me read it to you. This is an update in the course of recording this podcast. NBC 4 New York is told the decision to charge Daniel Penny was made by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office and will happen without being presented to a grand jury at this time. The Manhattan DA spokesperson and NYPD spokesperson have not returned requests for what charges may be filed Friday, and Penny's attorney did not return call for comment. Penny's attorneys have said previously there was no way he could have foreseen that his bid to subdue an alleged perceived threat would turn deadly. We do not yet know what the charges will be, but it seems imminent he will face charges, and he's surrendering Friday as you download this podcast. As I bring this to you right there, we're going to charge. I don't know about the facts and I don't know about the men, but we hope we are not charging the instinct of more people stepping up to protect their fellow Americans. That's going to do it for me today here on the Will Cain Podcast. I will see you again next time. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts and Amazon Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.